How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
This is Jay Martorelli coming to you from RDH Evolution. I'm not a hygienist, but I am a dental hygiene advocate. Now let's get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast.
It's amazing.
These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, listeners, to episode 117 of A Tale of Two Hygienists. This is Andrew.
This is Michelle.
You sound atrocious.
I have to give 4 2-hour lectures in the next 3 days.
I don't know how you're even going to do that.
I don't either.
But you sound like crap. Like really like poop.
Well, I'm just happy that I sound like this and I don't feel like it.
Oh. So did you already feel that way and it's just lingering or is the pain coming?
I honestly think this is just laryngitis. I just, when I was in Orlando at Townie. Mm-hmm. I don't know. My allergies were really bad there. I was super congested. I think I've said in the last 2 podcast episodes how like sinusy and congested I am. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've been a little more lethargic. I think like one night I slept a solid 10 hours.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that's weird. Normally I don't like getting up early to go to the gym, but normally I can muster up the energy. And that day I was just like, yeah, no, I turned that alarm off and it didn't set another one and woke up and it had been like a full 10 hours of sleeping. And
buddy,
so
sucks.
I'm just assuming that it was, I've been trying to fight off something.
Yeah.
But Mucinex is my friend. It makes a huge difference.
And that's what you say. I didn't really notice any difference when I tried using it that time. But I still did it because you told me to.
I'm not talking like a difference in like I'm better the next day, but I can tell like I don't cough, like my cough isn't nearly as bad. I slowly got my voice back over the weekend, but I have my nephews on Saturday, so mm-hmm. I just feel like that just automatically yelling.
I like how you tried to one up me on the baseball game. So, listeners, I went to a professional baseball game and took a picture and posted it. And Michelle decided to one-up me and take a picture. Was it your nephew's baseball game?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
a real sandlot of a baseball field.
It was a sandlot. It was awesome. It was really good.
Yep.
So, something that was really funny is Michelle and I were at the same airport for probably about 20 minutes.
Yep.
In a different state, just kind of passing through. So that was kind of weird.
I know. I really wish we could have managed to, like, see, but my flight was delayed. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And different terminals and stuff like that. It wouldn't have worked out anyway. But yeah. So, okay.
Yep.
We could talk probably for a long time, but I could talk. Michelle can't talk. So there will also not be a story time with Michelle at the end of this one for 2 reasons. 1, because she can't talk. And then 2, our interview went pretty long. It was really good. It was on one of Michelle's favorite topics, pediatric dentistry.
But I had so many questions. I learned a lot.
Yeah. I mean, and this was meant to be introductory. Dr. Joshua Wren was our guest, and he is a great lecturer. He's so smart. He has lots of – one of the things that he mentions in the podcast or in the interview was that he recorded a lot of the things that he was seeing so that he could see the changes of the procedures from, you know, one visit to the next on the patients.
Yeah.
And was it being effective? Was it not effective? And he gave some really good advice for those of us who maybe don't see pedos very often, but they do come through our chair every now and again. And he just had just a wealth of knowledge. I really, really enjoyed this particular interview. It kind of gave me a little bit of nostalgia, though, going back to the days when I just saw kids the whole time. So we really appreciate Dr. Wren for being on. We hope you guys get a lot of good stuff out of this. And email us with any of your questions. Let us know.
Yeah. So enjoy this interview with Dr. Joshua Wren.
Hey, Michelle.
Yeah.
It's time for the interview.
Oh, but I had something else to say.
We need to let the experts talk now.
Fine.
Welcome to the interview portion of this episode. We have a fantastic pediatric dentist with us today, Dr. Joshua Wren. I'm going to read his bio that can be found on pediatricdentalce.com. And the reason why I'm reading this one just for our listeners is there are two huge takeaways from this bio compared to the normal bios that we get that I kind of want to talk about. So he wrote, pediatric dentistry is an ever-changing field with evolving materials and methods. As a pediatric dentist, my main goal is to prevent dental caries, dental phobias, infection, pain, space loss, etc. My secondary goal is to perform treatment safely, effectively, quickly, and predictably. I received my dental degree from the University of Mississippi Medical Center in 2005 and my certificate in pediatric dentistry from the University of Kentucky in 2007. But I like to say that I received my real education from the School of Hard Knocks. Fresh out of residency, I started Wren Pediatric Dentistry in 2007 and was in for quite a bumpy ride. There were plenty of ups and downs, a lot more downs than ups. I started reviewing cases that went well and the ones that didn't go so well. Did clinical chart audits and started documenting cases in 2008. I researched and tried to figure out what went right and why, what went wrong and why. And in the process of doing this, I've accumulated quite a bit of material and have put together numerous tutorials and presentations. You've been published. You lecture quite regularly. You and I actually, I think, met for the first time. You're a moderator on dentaltown.com. And you've just done so much in the last several years, and it's really impressive. And we appreciate you taking the time to come talk with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I do like that bio, Andrew, because it's like learned from the School of Hard Knocks.
So that's one of the things I want to talk about. I want to talk about first of all, I know the listeners can't see it, but you said that your main goal is to prevent, and then you capitalize prevent. And I feel like a lot of times, you know, dentistry is a business. That's why we're all employed. But your focus really is to prevent. And I appreciated that a lot.
Yeah. You know, guys, we're one of the few specialties, not only in dentistry, but in medicine in general, that literally try to put ourselves out of business by preventing problems. Exactly. And especially as a pediatric dentist, you know, setting up a lifetime of good dental habits and not creating fear in a child, knowing how to approach an anxious child where they will not be an anxious adult. That's my number one goal.
Curious how that looks for you. I mean, that might be a real loaded question, but how do you prevent anxiety with your pedo patients?
Well, it's very difficult, and it does. It starts with quote, happy visits. It starts with visits that are hygiene-based and prevention-based only. So trying to prevent dental caries from the very first appointment now, does it go that way all of the time? Absolutely not. We'll see a five-year-old child for appointment one, meaning dental appointment one, not necessarily in our office, and they may already be, high caries rate with eight active lesions in their mouth. So it doesn't always set up that way for us, but I think if we can get in at an earlier age and get our message out, on average, a child sees a pediatrician 15 to 20 times before they see a dentist. And so the message really, in my opinion, needs to go to the pediatricians to get that message across for us.
At what age do you recommend that they start seeing the dental office personnel?
You know, as soon as their first tooth erupts, they need to be in a dental office that is used to seeing children. Now, I'm not saying a pediatric dentist by any means. Any dentist or dental office that is comfortable providing the correct prevention recommendations.
So I do have a little question about that, because that is something that I've always said. I don't know if you know anything about my past dental professional side of things. I have not worked with children like ever. Like, I did go into an office one time and they're like, can you take bite wings on this 4-year-old? And I was like, well, how? Like, how do I do that without right. getting bit? Like, I have no idea how to manage children. So when my friends and family, or if I had a patient in my perio chair that would ask about maybe a grandkid that they just had, like, when is the first time? And I'd say, as soon as that first tooth comes in, they should be mm-hmm. in a dental chair. And then I got pushback, I would say probably a few years ago, that said, why? They don't sit still. What are we doing? Like, why would that even matter? We're not going to take x-rays. We're not going to do all these things. And I also think that they don't know how to charge for that as well, because that was the other side of it. Like, what am I going to like put like 20 minutes in my schedule for this 1-year-old that comes to sit down and might scream and cry and disrupt the rest of the practice? So do you get that pushback? And if you do, what is your answer to that?
Yeah, we do a lot of times. And what we need to realize is a 1-year-old that is going to squirm and that we're not doing a whole lot on is much better than a 2-year-old with active dental caries that needs treatment. So we're big on anticipatory guidance. You know, we've all heard that term a lot, but if we can anticipate problems that may arise and then address those before they become problems, that's where it's at. Because if you see a 1-year-old for 4 times by the time they're 3, that 3-year-old is going to sit in that chair and more than likely do everything that they need to do because they've had that positive interaction with your office. So it's all about anticipatory guidance more than anything. Parents think, and a lot of dentists and dental auxiliaries think, that the most important thing about a hygiene appointment, a recare appointment, is Profi and fluoride varnish. Mm-hmm. When in actuality, the most important things are dietary restrictions, establishing that, and oral hygiene instructions. But we definitely do that. We put a rubber cup on a 2-year-old's tooth if parents want us to clean their teeth, because that does build value. They may say, mm-hmm. well, we're coming to get their teeth cleaned, and that's what they say. We're coming to get a checkup and the teeth clean. Parents don't call and say, we want dietary restrictions and oral hygiene instructions. But that is the most important thing.
No, gosh, that's a great way.
I have questions for you later about parents, for sure.
Yeah, that would be great.
Oh, man, those parents. Okay, so you get him in when they're, you know, 1, 2, 3, somewhere in there is when you start to see them. They're acting up. You're starting to try and get them to have a good behavior. But why would you do this? Like, what's your driving force other than wanting to prevent caries and create people that haven't had the phobias? Like, why would you put yourself through this when there's so many other parts of dentistry that you could have went into?
Yeah, just for that reason, to prevent. My goal, and I tell parents this when they have their 1-year-old in the chair, I say, look, my goal is to have Susie here be 15 at the lunch table at school. One of her friends has to get checked out early to go to the dentist to get some cavities filled, because that's mm-hmm. what they're going to say. Mm-hmm. I want your precious little 1-year-old here to be able to say at 15, whoa, I've never had a cavity. What's that like? And that's my goal. Mm-hmm. That's why I do what I do. Put myself through that situation.
Well, thank you for doing that, by the way, for the rest of us who are going to be seeing the adults later on or the teenagers yes. later on, because, man, I worked in pediatrics for a little bit, and like I alluded to earlier, I mean, the parents is what ran me out of that place.
Oh,
but maybe help us understand what your day-to-day looks like. What does your office setup look like? Who are the members on your team that you work with?
Yeah, we have 11 chairs. There's two docs that work in this practice. I fortunately got a great partner in July of 2016. And so we have 11 chairs that the two of us mainly work out of one op each. So okay. One quiet room, I put that in air quotes, because oftentimes they're not so quiet.
Oh, yeah.
But so that's where we do our treatments, our crowns, our pulpotomies, our fillings, our extractions. And we have the rest. We have two rooms dedicated that we call baby rooms. And those rooms are, they look more like a nursery. They're very cool, calming colors with child artistic type work on the wall. And that room is not equipped with air water, plumbed for air water, not equipped with air water, but we do our prophys on just say a two-year-old. The biggest obstructions to a two-year-old's cleaning are air water. They get that air water shock, if you will. As soon as that sprays, they want to jump up, even though they're lying down and being very calm. And the prophy paste. I know you can get plaque off of a tooth with a cordless prophy angle without having gritty paste on there, prophy paste. So we have two rooms dedicated that we do that with. That we just for the babies, 1 and 2, and sometimes 3-year-olds. And then we have an open hygiene bay with 4 chairs. That's where we treat our cooperative hygiene patients, because positive modeling is very important for children. If they see other kids doing well beside them, they tend to do well. If they see a child screaming beside them, they they don't do so well.
Yeah.
And then we have a three chair open bay area where I do orthodontics as well. And we have two staff members to answer the staff member questions. We have 2 up front and 3 in the back. We utilize coronal polishing certified dental assistants. So we have 3 in the back. That's our setup.
So a couple of questions to piggyback off of that. So where did you learn about the behavior modeling part of that? Is that when you were doing your pediatric specific education? And then also, did you have someone help you design like the baby rooms in the schools, or is this something you're thinking about?
Yeah, the modeling and all the behavior guidance, I say all, because we talked about the School of Hard Knocks in the beginning. I learned the theories in residency. And I've been able to apply and modify in practice over, 11 years now. And the baby rooms was just, it was a thought. It was a thought that worked. I was in another office that was much smaller for 7 years. When I started, I had 5 chairs and I didn't have a baby room. And I thought, man, when I build a new office, we need baby rooms.
Yeah.
So, just live and learn, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I find too, is experience is some of the best teacher. I mean, one of the parts I wanted to come back to in your bio was, that Hard Knocks, I feel like we learn so many things from our mistakes, and it's such a great opportunity if we just embrace making all the mistakes.
Oh, exactly right. Mistakes are learning experiences, for sure.
What do you find are the most common procedures that you're doing on a day-to-day?
Mostly proximal restorations, a lot of MOs and DOs, some crowns, quite a few crowns, but most of the lesions that I'm seeing in primary teeth, at least, are MOs and DOs. So kids just aren't flossing. I don't know what percentage of the population of children actually floss, but I would venture to say in my area, I'm in a rural state in Mississippi, and I would guess 1%, maybe 1 to 5% floss their teeth.
That's on a regular basis. What I would have gone with too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, and we like to use the analogy. We say, well, do you ever go outside barefoot? Do you ever stomp in a mud puddle? To children, this really hits home to them. Well, yeah. Well, does it do any good to clean the bottom of your feet and the top of your feet? No. What about between your toes? Does mud get there? Yeah, a lot of mud gets there. All right, well, it's the same idea. You know, junk gets between your teeth, not just on your teeth.
Yeah. And do you feel like that resonates with them? Do you feel like they're learning, or do you feel like you're still seeing the same rates of decay?
I think so, but I honestly think it's I'm spinning my wheels a little bit.
Well, then, can I ask you, what recommendations do you make for tools to clean between a child's teeth?
Most of our children that are really young like the little floss picks.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them do. It's the older, but they do not know how to use floss, period. And if you give them a string of floss, you should, you've probably done this. You should see them try to twirl it around their fingers and put it between their teeth. They do not have the manual dexterity to do so. So we put that back on the parent. Because we say a child cannot brush their teeth well until they can tie their shoes really well. Well, flossing is much later than that. They just don't have the manual dexterity till they're sometimes 11, 12 years of age.
Yeah.
To be able to floss their own teeth.
And not even then. So a lot of my research is on home care tools and interdental care. And the research that I have and the recommendations that I read are the little floss and tosses. Like those are quick and easy. Gum chucks. I don't know if you've personally heard of gum chucks. And that I've seen not so much for like, you know, your 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds to use so much on themselves, but for the parents to help facilitate that flossing after brushing. So they don't have to put their hands in the kids' mouths, and the kids like to shoot it at the end. And then I have some newer research out on the rubber bristle brush, which is your Easy Picks from Tepe or your Soft Picks from Gum, and what that is doing on intact papilla and how it's creating health. And so anybody that is pre-disease, they're finding that they're very successful with using those as a alternative to floss. So it's not disrupting as much biofilm as, let's say, maybe the floss and toss, but it's actually giving that tissue compression at the tip, and it's disrupting enough that it is keeping them in that symbiotic kind of relationship with the bacteria in their mouth. So those are two things that I would love to have any feedback. Maybe I can send you some or something like that, and you could tell me.
Please do. And what was the rubber? What was that?
They're terming them rubber bristle brush. And I know, like, say that three times really fast. It's impossible. Yeah. My late night webinars get real interesting when I'm like, rubber bristled brushes. Like,
alcohol helps her say it better.
Sometimes it does. The wine always makes me way better at speaking.
Makes everything better.
Yeah, absolutely. and that's going to be your Tepe Easy Picks or Gum Soft Picks.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, like, when you have these discussions with parents and the kid about these dietary restrictions, like, what is your, like, do you have some bullet points that you go through with them? What kind of recommendations are you making?
Yeah, we do. And the most important that we tell them is sugary drinks are a no. 100% fruit juice is loaded in sucrose, and they think they're doing the child a favor by giving them 100% fruit juice. So that's our big one. I mean, I had a parent in about 2 weeks ago that said, well, he drinks a lot of Gatorade because when he gets out on the ball fields, you know, we think he needs Gatorade, and dad always drank Gatorade on the ball fields. And I looked at her and I'm like, your child is 3 years old. Your child is not sweating.
Not losing the electrolytes that an adult.
I know. Is your child an Olympian?
Like, yeah, exactly. Who's out on the baseball field picking up, you know, picking flowers? The child's not water. So that's a different mindset. And you guys know it's hard to change behavior. It is really difficult to change behavior.
Yeah.
But that's one of the main ones. And our other ones are fruit chews between meals. We're big on anti-snacking of anything with sugar in it. Mm-hmm. We prefer, you know, nuts and cheese and things like that that are lower glycemic index, if you will. So, and not only that, a lot of these parents are really setting their children up for hyperactive disorders because they're feeding them so much sugar. Mm-hmm. So our main things are anything sticky and retentive to avoid. And if they want their cup of juice or chocolate milk or strawberry milk or whatever they prefer, we say do that at mealtimes only. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So not to snack on.
It's really interesting. We actually had, right before you, Dr. Uchi Odiatsu was talking about just gut health and things like that, that everything that you've mentioned so far actually has even a broader appeal than just the localized caries part of it. If we could teach these parents that, yes, it's going to help right here, right in the mouth, but it's also going to go systemically and be healthier for the child, the cheeses and the nuts and things like that, I would hope to think that the parents would maybe take it to heart a little bit more.
I would suspect. I am not a parent. I have nephews and I have lots of friends with kids that I take and get my baby fix and give them back. And it's wonderful. And what I know about all of my friends and family is that no one wants their kids sick.
Right.
And I think when you try to talk to them about, you know, sometimes people are just like surviving, right? The surviving the day. And they're going to throw whatever at their kid to make them not be maniacs. But I think also if you're like, this is making them sick, like you're setting them up for disease later, not just so far later, not in their adult life, but also in their young years, teenage years, early 20s, because you are setting up inflammation, you're setting up just bad habits. I can't imagine parents want their kids to be sick all the time. And I think always bringing it back to that would help. Again, I say that being a non-parent working with no kids. So,
yeah, you would think so, but it seems like the most common thing we see now with parenting, and I'm guilty of it sometimes too. I have a 3 and 8 year old, is looking for a quick fix. And forgetting about the things you may have been warned about at the dentist office. And again, that should come back more to a communication effort for us as dentists to physicians also, and to the pediatricians, because I'm not sure how you guys feel, but I think recommendations coming from a pediatrician or physician resonate more with parents than coming from us as dental professionals. I'm not sure if that's true, but that's kind of how I feel. There's, it seems to be more of a respect factor coming from them than us. Maybe not, maybe I'm wrong, but I think we should try to get them on board as well.
It's so funny because if you think about what you mentioned earlier, if they would realize that, hey, we're trying to end our own, you know, profession as dental professionals, like you'd think that they'd want to follow our recommendations more and more, but there's something not quite clicking with some of the parents. But do you see on average that you have problems with parents not following recommendations or maybe causing problems in the operatory while you're working? Do you allow parents to go back with their child? Like where do you stand on that?
No, we're typically new patients only. Parents come back because we want them to see the office. For some recare appointments that parents will choose to come back and we allow that. But for treatments, we prefer to have that one-on-one communication with the patient. So it's very rare, maybe once a week, maybe not even that often, do we have a parent in the operatory.
That's so smart. Oh, I wish I could. That's genius. Okay, so all of our listeners, if you're a hygienist or even dentist that listen to this, take that little nugget from this podcast. Don't let parents back in the operatory ever if you can help it.
I want to get into your changes instantly.
Yeah, it does. Well, it's just like if you're babysitting someone else's kid, they act so much better for you than they do for their own parents. I mean, it's bizarro. I want to get into a little bit more technical talk, a little bit more clinical questions, unless Michelle had anything else that you want to talk about.
I don't know. You may talk about this because I'm curious what other recommendations you make or have for parents if they are anti-fluoride or against fluoride anyway. Like, are you talking about xylitol or like basic bites? Or I think a healthy diet is first and foremost, because fluoride isn't preventing disease. It's remineralizing a tooth that's already demineralized. So we want to start with the prevention, like you are saying. But for those patients that might be in, they read all the blogs from Food Babe that said don't have fluoride. What are your thoughts and feelings, and do you have other recommendations?
Yeah, xylitol is one of our only recommendations. And like you said, a healthy diet, first and foremost. We rarely see children with caries in our office that follow a healthy diet. So the fluoride, the anti-fluoride parents, the first thing that I do is realize that I'm not them and they're not me. And I don't try to convince. I educate, and that's it. I leave it alone. And then I try to give them other guidelines to follow, mainly being the xylitol. I like sugar-free chewing gum for kids that are able to chew it without swallowing it. That I really think that helps clean the teeth, stimulate saliva. So we recommend that as well, but mainly the healthy diet.
And is it the sugar-free gum with xylitol or just sugar-free gum?
Correct. Sugar-free gum with xylitol.
I'm taking notes. Y'all, I'm going to tell you, my sister never listens to this podcast because she would just die. But my little 7-year-old went in to get one cavity filled and seal his 6-year molars, and he almost had to have 3 root canals on those 6-year molars.
Oh, no.
I was like, oh. So I'm literally taking notes because, again, I don't work with the kids. So I'm like, let me see what I can find out. And I'm like taking notes. I'm calling my sister after this. I'm like, here are all of them. Do not let
Michelle's actually never worked with restorative at all. This is all brand new information for her. And I feel like there's a whole group of hygienists and assistants that listen to the podcast are probably actually in the same boat.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to get too deep on a lot of these things, but I do kind of want to keep it. I don't know. I want to kind of delve a little bit deeper now.
Go ahead. That's okay. Well, because there's going to be more that have seen.
And we only have like 10 minutes left, so we gotta really get through this. Okay. So I want to know about your thoughts on anesthesia. I want to know everything. Blocks, infiltrations, septicane versus lidocaine, your maximum safe dosage, maximum recommend dosages. Do you weigh the children? Like everything about it.
And 10 minutes and go.
You know,
there were 4 minutes, whatever.
I love the question. You read about too many sedation. I'm putting air quotes around sedation deaths too, because if we could have access to those reports, most of them would not be sedation related deaths. They would be local anesthetic toxicity deaths. So one thing that I go over ad nauseum in my course is be aware of the exact amount of local you can give before you ever even administer one drop of local. You never know when you're not going to achieve profound anesthesia and have to go to one more carp. And it's very, very dangerous. Yes, we have a scale. I mentioned my partner has one quiet room and I have one quiet room. We have a scale at the entrance of both of those rooms. We weigh every child before we administer a drop. And then we have a spreadsheet that we just pop it up on the computer, enter the weight. It tells us exactly how much lidocaine we can give, exactly how much septicaine we can give. So there is no guessing. And only one carp is out on our trays. Only one carp. Nice. So if I need a second carp, I'm asking for a second carp, and I know exactly how much I can give. So we follow the typical MSDS guidelines on the amount of anesthesia we can give. We dose 4% septicane with 1 to 100,000 epinephrine at 7 mg/kg. And then the 2% lidocaine at 4.4 mg/kg. Mm-hmm. Now, one big thing that's changed for me in the past 5 years, I would say, is the administering of a super topical. We don't use 20% benzocaine like we used to in our office. We use a compounded triple topical that has prilocaine, tetracaine, and lidocaine in it.
Do you have a pharmacy mix it yourself, or do you buy it like that from?
I buy it like that from, his name is John Hollis Pharmacy, and he's in Nashville, Tennessee.
I feel like I used to use that too. It was a compounded from somebody in Tennessee.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's very, very good. We apply it for about 1 to 1.5 minutes, and we never block for primary teeth. I haven't blocked for a primary tooth in 10 years. And people say, well, you can't do a pulpotomy and a stainless steel crown with infiltration. Well, you can. And what we typically do is septocaine on those teeth, and we infiltrate till the tissue bubbles ever so slightly in the alveolar mucosa. And then I enter it's similar to a PDL, except I'm not entering at the PDL. I'm given more of a periosteal injection at each root apex on the buccal. I'm not going to the lingual for a pulp and crown. The only time I'm going to the lingual is for an extraction. And then I'm going through the buccal papilla to the lingual papilla and then walking the injection around on the lingual. So that's my take on anesthesia local. And on 6-year molars, oftentimes, if it's a lesion that's only, 4 millimeters deep or something like that, maybe 2 to 3 millimeters into dentin, a lot of times those do great with the same exact technique. One thing you have to be aware of, and that I've learned, is the children with very large buccal bone, those really dense mandibles, they're harder to infiltrate. So we go more to a block on those 6-year molars and 12-year molars.
So do you, when you're doing, you said you go down in the vestibule until it bubbles, and then you do kind of like a periosteal. Do you actually go through the bone at all, or are you just stopping right where you hit bone?
No, stopping right where I hit bone. I enter in the attached gingiva.
Okay.
Just apical to the PDL space, and slide it all the way down till I think I'm at the apex. Okay. And then administer. So I'm not using any of the techniques that are truly through the bone.
And I like the through the papilla technique, by the way, if you have to get lingual. That's golden. I used to do that for pediatrics. Yeah, they love it.
They feel nothing, which is wonderful.
Tell me about nitrous. Tell me your thoughts on nitrous, pros, cons. Do you have it plumbed in? Do you have carts?
Yeah, we have it plumbed in. And I don't like to give blanket statements, but here comes one. Any patient that receives local in our office gets nitrous. Mm. I mean, it's more difficult to go if they're ever so anxious and you may not know it. They may be hiding it really well. Anxiety induces more of a painful stimulus than if a child is not anxious. So that's why I'm a big believer in nitrous. So pretty much every patient is on 40% nitrous for the injection and throughout treatment.
Okay. Do you ever feel a need to bump it up?
Yeah. Yeah. Every once in a while, if it's a super anxious child, I'm not saying combative, but super anxious child, we'll put it at 50%.
Mm-hmm. Are your dental assistants allowed to adjust things or not in your state?
Not in our state.
Okay. Can they turn it off or not even turn it off?
They can't turn it off.
Okay. Going back to your class twos, your interproximal fillings that you're doing quite a bit of, do you have a preference on composite or glass ionomers? Do you place alloys still? What are your thoughts on all of those?
No, I'm a big believer in the resin modified glass ionomer type restorations, and I use exclusively Activa these days. Activa is a newer bioactive material, resin-based material, and it releases calcium phosphate and fluoride. So one thing about GIs is, we never see recurrent caries under them, literally ever, but the durability is very weak, and they're more water-soluble not only do they absorb water, they're slightly soluble in water. So we see them wash out a lot. Yep. Mm-hmm. So the Activa has been a game changer there, because it's kind of a hybrid, if you will, between traditional resin-based composites and more of the glass ionomers.
Do you also use the resin modified glass ionomers in permanent teeth or just pediatric?
Yes, both permanent teeth as well. And that's typically Activa. It's categorized, it's a long story, too much to go into here, but it's categorized as a resin modified glass ionomer. Mm-hmm. But because it was FDA approved, those were the predicate products, the products it was compared to for testing, but it's actually not a resin modified glass ionomer. So I wouldn't say we technically put RMGIs in permanent teeth, but we put Activa in permanent teeth.
Okay. Do you code out for a temporary filling, or do you use it a permanent restoration at that point? Is it the composite code that you use?
Permanent restoration, exactly.
Okay. You don't ever use any amalgam at all?
No.
Interesting. Do you find in your area that everyone's kind of gone away from alloys with pediatrics?
Yeah, I'm not sure of a dentist around that does amalgams in primary teeth. Now, permanent teeth is a different story. We still have a lot that do that for permanent teeth, but not that there's a right or wrong. I think amalgam is a wonderful product. I'm by no means against amalgam. Mm-hmm. But you know, a lot of times too, that enamel is a little bit thinner on those primary teeth, so fracture rates is higher.
Yeah. Probably got to take out a little bit more tooth structure for retention and all that stuff too, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I know we're kind of bumping up against our time. I just have a few more questions that I wanted to talk about.
Any of them on silver diamine by chance?
Yeah. One of my last ones is rubber dam use. What are your thoughts on rubber dam use?
We're isolate. Oh, isolate.
I love isolate.
Yeah. We're big on isolate.
How do you select if a patient needs to do GA, general anesthesia case? Like, do you find that happens quite a bit in your office? Are you allowed to participate in those?
Yes. Yeah, we go to GA, I say a limited amount. We go once a month. We'll typically do 4 to 5 cases a day. So it's not a huge need, but it would probably be a larger need if we had more, if we had a higher acceptance rate, because a lot of parents think it's okay for GA for ear tubes, but it's no, I'm not putting my child to sleep to fix their teeth.
Yeah.
So it's one of those that the physician is more respected than we are things again. But anytime a child is combative and they need work that cannot be delayed, then that's a good indication for general anesthesia. Mm-hmm. Or anytime that there's 4 quadrants of work to be done.
Yeah.
So if you're talking 8 proximal lesions and a couple of anteriors in a 4-year-old, then it may be the best option to do GA and get those taken care of at once versus having the child do great appointment 1, having the child do good appointment 2, having the child a basket case for appointment 3 when you still have 1 more appointment, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So a lot of that is dictated by the amount of work and the combativeness of the child.
That's a good thought. I mean, because I feel like you're right, though. There's definitely a medical versus dental like thought process with these parents. But we've seen so many successful cases in GA that, I mean, the long-term effect for that child is amazing. It's so much better than slowly letting them behaviorally decline and then get angry at dentists and be combative.
Yeah.
That's
So I want to talk about your kind of as a closing, your any new thoughts, emerging products or techniques, including SDF and things that we should know about that's just now starting or on the horizon.
Yeah, there are a few things going on that I can't talk about that will be exciting for the field of dentistry in the next 3 to 5 years. Very exciting things. But silver diamine fluoride, that was one that came out a couple of years ago that was really a game changer for a lot of practices, because if we can arrest the lesion and not treat the lesion conventionally, if a child is extremely anxious and GA would be the only option, then silver diamine fluoride was a game changer for those kind of situations. Mm-hmm. What I have personally found is not that I'm against silver diamine fluoride in any way, but I got burned a couple of times thinking it was more effective than it actually was. And what it comes down to me is, if behavior and diet and oral hygiene don't change at home, it doesn't matter what we put on the tooth, except a stainless steel crown. Yeah. Stainless steel crown hygiene can be awful. Diet can be awful. The stainless steel crown will not get recurrent caries on a primary tooth. It just doesn't happen. But it will with other restorations. It will with other medicaments we can apply on the tooth. So it goes back to behavior once again. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. How do you select the cases for, in addition to having, you know, good home care, is there a certain depth of caries that you're looking at before you apply it, or do you do any excavation first?
Yeah, I apply it mainly these days in more of an indirect pulp approach, to where we're getting fairly close to the pulp and I don't want to expose the pulp. 6-year mm-hmm. molar is a great example. Now, it is a pulpal irritant if applied too close to the pulp. What's too close? I don't know. But is it a half a millimeter? Is it a millimeter? It may be 2 millimeters in one patient and 1/4 millimeter in another patient. So, but in those cases, we scoop out the softer decay, especially in 6-year molars. And if we think we're going to get a pulp exposure, I stop there and apply silver diamine fluoride and temporize. I'll even temporize them occasionally with a GI and then bring them back, open it back up, remove a little bit more of the caries and restore conventionally at that point. No SDF.
And are you finding that when you go back in to open it back up, the dentin's a little bit harder?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think that's just a great combination of the two materials together, the GI and the SDF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that too. Michelle, you have any last questions before we wrap up?
Nope. I learned a lot today.
Doctor, thank you for taking the time. I'm sorry. It's kind of rapid fire questions on you at that point.
I enjoyed it.
I'd love to have you back on.
Yeah. Because I would like to talk about the child abuse and things like that side of pedo.
There's so many more things to talk about. I mean, pediatrics is so fascinating to me. I want to talk about the specialty. I have a lot of things to ask you, doctor.
Yeah, let's get a schedule, guys.
Awesome.
Thanks
for today.
How about some contact information? If someone wanted to reach out and maybe have you come speak at one of their lecture seminars or conferences, where can they find your information? How can they reach you?
Yeah, on pediatricdentalce.com. There'll be a contact us button that gets emailed to myself and my office manager. And there's also our office telephone numbers on that site as well. So if anybody needs to reach me, that's the spot.
All right. We appreciate your time, doctor. Thank
I
you
have
for being
one
on.
Random question. I'm sorry. Okay.
She does. Of course.
What is the youngest child you've ever scale and root planed or non-surgical therapy?
Two.
Wow.
Bless. I did not think I was going to hear that. Okay. Sorry. I just was curious about that, but.
And that's been more than once.
Oh God. Well, thank you again. We do appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was an excellent interview as always. We so appreciate people when they come on with all that good knowledge, man.
It was good. It was really good. Yeah. Very friendly. Super
hey,
nice guy.
Are we posting that picture that he sent us after the fact?
We are. That's going to be the thumbnail for this episode as well.
Sweet. See, aren't you glad that I interrupted and asked that question?
I am. And yeah, I am. I'm glad that you interrupt sometimes on the occasion.
Oh, thanks. Well, this was a great week. We hope everybody else enjoys their week. Don't forget that you can check us out at atailatohygienist.com. Find us on Instagram because we are getting active on Insta and Facebook, of course. Continue to share. For those of you who have shared posts, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate that. And also recorded your intros. You're the best.
Yeah,
a few of you out there.
Of those. Yeah, that were great.
And then you can always email us at atailatohygienist.com or at gmail.com. Anything else I'm forgetting, Andrew?
I think that's it. Be contacting us. That's great. We got a couple of emails and a couple of messages this week. So that was really nice of you guys. We appreciate that.
Yep. And if you're going to Euro Perio, tell us because we're going to be there, guys.
Yeah.
I know of two people that are going now, which is so fun. And we want to hang out and see
you. Let me also say, if you're in the London area the week before, maybe the weekend before Euro Perio, well, that's where we're going to be first. And we would love to do some interviews. You don't have to be a subject matter expert on anything in particular, but I have a whole list of questions about what does it take to be a licensed hygienist there. There are therapists there. What does that exactly entail? Dental nurse, what are the rules? All the stuff, like the insurance
stuff.
We have a lot of questions about that. So if you have any knowledge on that, let us know. We'll schedule something.
And just a heads up, we do have an event calendar that we're working on the website as well. So we'll be at like the Wisconsin Indigo Conference.
October.
I believe that's in October.
Yep.
I'll also be at the Missouri Dental Hygiene Conference. I believe that's a go. And RDH under one roof, of course. So there's going to be quite a few little spots. So you can come find us. Also, guys, we got some new swag from dentaltease.com. That's dentaltease.com. Andy RDH has put together some really cool stuff for us, t-shirts, bags. We're going to work on some car decals. And I have really awesome handmade wine glasses with our logos etched in it. So if you want to enjoy story time with Michelle with your very own Southern wine glass with our logo on it.
Because you're going to need some wine to get through it.
You should do that. So hit us up if you are looking for swag or you want to go to dentaltease.com. Anything else?
Nah, I think that's good. Have a good week, everybody.
All right. Bye, y'all. This is Michelle.
Bye.